it's really all about relationships and, you know, developing those personal relationships with your customers, understanding what their goals and objectives are and what's important to them, and being able to have, you know, frank conversations with them about things and making sure that you're listening to what their concerns are.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We're here today with Don McMillan, Senior Director of Information Services and Regional CIO for Maine Health Central Region. Don, thank you so much for joining us today. Welcome.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, so Don, one of your primary roles is to manage the relationship between IT and hospital executives, consulting leaders on strategies to leverage technology to meet organizational and operational objectives. What are some of the challenges of bringing together people, technology, and business objectives?
Some of the challenges is often there can be a disconnect between what, you know, IT is planning on doing and what the business is planning on doing. And so I make sure that the IT organization understands the priorities and initiatives of and problems that the senior management teams are trying to solve at the hospitals, and also making sure that the senior management team understands what the IT department is working on and why. And so I'm that glue between the two, and I can understand the technical concepts and explain it in plain language that the senior leadership team can understand.
So a lot of times on these episodes, people are listening on their commute to work in the car, and it's very helpful if when guests illustrate a particular concept with an anecdote from their history. Is there an example, Don, that you can share with our listeners about your role as an ombudsman and how you were able to bring people together? Perhaps what would have happened if you hadn't done that? Like, where were they different and different levels? And then what the outcome was?
Sure. You know, one of the more complex technical projects that we had more recently was collapsing one of our Active Directory domains. So Maine Health started off kind of like a federated system where we had, you know, brought together several different hospitals in Maine. And, you know, over time, we grew into a healthcare system. And as we brought together those hospitals, we brought on their technologies. And so we had at one point five different Active Directory domains. We ended up collapsing those down into two. And the last one to be collapsed was the Active Directory domain servicing Maine Medical Center and mostly the central region in Maine. And it was our largest Active Directory that we had in the system. So we really needed to get that down to one so that we could start to do more advanced projects like moving to Microsoft 365 in the cloud, getting our Epic system off-premise and into the cloud as well. It was, you know, we needed to be on one Active Directory domain to do that. But as you can imagine, it's a significant change when you're doing this, and the impact to the practices into the hospital was significant. So part of what my role was here is being that communication, helping people understand, you know, why we're doing this, you know, what is an Active Directory domain anyways, and communicating the schedule and delays and, you know, what to expect as things were happening, and knowing that we were going to have technical glitches. We just knew that, yeah, it wasn't going to, you know, be sunshine and roses as we were, you know, moving each group over, and we were doing it in batches. Yeah, it could be impactful, and it was a matter of setting expectations with the customer, prioritizing issues that would present as they would come up so that our technical teams knew what was the most important thing to focus on, and really making sure that we had that VIP list of people together And, you know, understand also there were certain devices in the clinical environment that we knew we could not do automatically. We had to do manually, particularly in the procedural areas. And so I was making sure to review our project plan for that and ensure that, yeah, the team had accounted for those devices and we had properly engaged our clinical engineering teammates on this. And it was end up being a very long project overall, you know, very successful, and we got it done.
So congratulations on that, Don. What I'd like to say, though, is there may be CIOs listening to this episode right now and they're saying, you know, I'm working on a bunch of projects and I've had problems working with the business teams in my organization. I've had some pushback from some different important key stakeholders. I've heard you say, Don, that it's very important to set expectations, determine why something's happening, explain, communicate schedules, and introduce transparency. Are there any common pitfalls that you've seen CIOs fall into when they're trying to push a advance a project forward? And just kind of, there's some issues with moving people and meeting business objectives. I guess my fundamental question is, what can CIOs do to better facilitate projects in alignment with business objectives?
Well, I think that most people that get to CIO level have learned this lesson a while ago, otherwise you wouldn't be in that role. So maybe for the emerging CIO or the person that's growing into that, but you know, and it's really all about relationships and, you know, developing those personal relationships with your customers, understanding what their goals and objectives are and what's important to them, and being able to have, you know, frank conversations with them about things and making sure that you're listening to what their concerns are. Often I've seen it with, you know, people in technology that say, you know, look, we just need to get this project done. We, you know, here's our timeline to do it. And it's like, okay, well, did we take a step back and share this plan with our customer and consider the impact that it's going to have on the customer and the things that they're working on? Because they may, the IT teams may not realize that they're is planned to be a joint commission survey or, you know, the magnet organization coming in to visit the organization around the same time that we're planning on making, you know, a significant change. And so if you've got those relationships with your customers and you're bringing the plans forward to them and giving them an opportunity to look at it and, you know, the technical details aside, helping them to understand that impact, then they can, you know, be better advised and be a partner in the change. And that's really what is going to help you to be successful going forward, is making sure that you've got those relationships and you're treating your customers as partners.
I love, Don, your emphasis on relationships. And on the topic of partners and change, Maine Health has partnerships with the Tufts School of Medicine and the Rue Institute. I believe, Don, you initiated a project to analyze waveform data to better predict adverse events before they happen, and also engage in ambient dictation for key ambulatory practices to reduce physician documentation time. Can you speak about the initiation of those projects, how the partnerships have evolved over time, and what you're accomplishing, what the rollout has been, what the objectives are?
Just to be clear, you know, I wouldn't say that I initiated these projects. I've been an advisor for folks working on these projects, and we do have a great relationship with Tufts School of Medicine and the Maine Rue Institute, and Maine Health also has the Maine Health Research Institute that does a lot of really interesting medical research, and they're doing some great work, and we're excited to see this partnership continue to evolve. And, you know, I was approached about the project with the Tufts and the Rue Institute by our medical director of academic affairs. And he said, hey, we've got some researchers that want to start looking at, waveform data and doing some research using AI and putting things through doing more with big data analytics. And, what do you think? Is this something that can be done? And he thought, yeah, absolutely. You know, other organizations have done it. This is a huge shift in, healthcare IT is, having, more, there's a ton of data out there that is available to be analyzed in, real time and, but also retrospectively. And it's a matter of setting those systems up and, enabling, that data to be available to researchers. And if you just look at how many times a nurse in an ICU is recording a patient's vital signs into the medical record, sometimes it may be every 15 minutes, and that may be for an hour, or every 30 minutes for 4 hours, but then it starts to be more routine, like every 8 hours. And so that's a limited set of data points. When you start to then take the data in from bedside monitors, waveforms, and start to push them into artificial intelligence or big data analytics engines, then you can start to get live data feeds, and you get hundreds of data points per second or millisecond. And so it's much higher fidelity amount of data that they're able to analyze. Now, I'm not a data scientist, but understanding the general concepts here, that's a lot more data that is available to them. And once you've identified the algorithms and have a general understanding of, hey, we notice that when a patient demonstrates, this type of breathing pattern, in combination with their blood pressure and heart rate, this is a indicator that they are going to be developing SIRS. And if we can identify that pattern and send a message out to providers in real time, you can impact and save a lot of lives. So that project is in the early planning stages. We're working with our partners at Philips to get the architecture set up, and also working with the Roux Institute on the work to set up the data analytics engine. So a lot of planning is going on, but they've done a lot of great initial research on kind of planning out what it is that they want to accomplish. And other organizations that I've been at have accomplished the exact thing that they're hoping to do. So it's not new, but it's also, I wouldn't say old hat. It is an emerging field in healthcare IT, is to leverage the amount of data that we have available and use that to impact care, because you can't have physicians constantly monitoring the data in real time. They get distracted, they get pulled away. But a AI machine doesn't sleep, doesn't take PTO, doesn't have a bad day, and is constantly watching that data stream. So it's a huge step forward for providing better care to our patients.
You've also been working on centralizing telesitters.
Yeah. So one of the biggest challenges that all the healthcare organizations around the country are experiencing is staffing challenges. You can't hire. We had a nursing shortage before the pandemic. The nursing shortage, the pandemic exacerbated that nursing shortage. And, you know, just hiring people into healthcare has been a real challenge. So combine that with increased lengths of stay, again, sicker patients coming into the hospital, you know, you need to better leverage your staff. And several years ago, Maine Medical Center started a telesitter program. We had about 18 cameras that we had in patients' rooms. Some of them were in psych units that were ceiling mounted cameras. And we were watching those patients continuously to make sure that they were staying safe and avoiding any potential self-harm, and also protecting the staff that would go in and provide care of those patients, but also in the non-psych units, putting them into rooms where patients who are had a high fall risk. And you know, you can have one telesitter watching 10 to 12 cameras at a time versus having one person in each one of those rooms. So you're literally cutting your staffing requirements down by a tenth of what you would normally need. And that program was super successful. They did a fantastic job. And as we're, you know, experiencing these, you know, staffing shortages, we said, you know, what can we do to better serve our organization and make use of the staff that we have? And the natural extension was, well, we need to expand this telesitter program. So we moved our sitters out from Maine Medical Center into a central location, still located in Portland. Then that location's got a generator backup if anything were to happen. So they've got data and power backup, and expanded the number of actual telesitters that are available. So we're able to watch more patients at a time. And we're rolling out additional cameras to our partners. So we literally have quadrupled the number of cameras that we have out in our environment. So we're providing telesitting services to our hospitals in the coastal regions and the southern regions of Maine and the mid-coast regions of Maine, and we'll be expanding it out to our other local health systems in Maine Health. And it's a huge step forward, and is really going to help us to provide better care. And one of our key metrics is reducing falls with harm. And this is a great way to do that, because we can get eyes on patients, be more efficient with our staffing, and reduce overall cost of care for the organizations.
Well, Don, we are approaching the end of this podcast episode. We've covered different programs that offer some sort of monitoring in order to take action, whether it be live telesitting monitoring of patients, or whether it be kind of ambient waveform data collection with streaming data streams that would produce an alert for adverse events. I think many of our listeners are also doing different various degrees of monitoring programs as well. And I think they may be wondering, how do you implement these programs? How do you evaluate the effectiveness and the benefits of these programs and taking action based upon these data streams? What would you say to those members of the audience who'd be asking that right now?
Well, work with your clinical partners in advance to identify what are the metrics of success. Before you even start the project, you should have an idea of what it is that you're trying to impact. What's the problem that you're trying to solve? Are you trying to prevent falls with harm? Are you trying to prevent the onset of sepsis in the hospital? Are you trying to reduce your length of stay in the critical care unit, reduce readmissions? What are those clinical metrics that you're trying to impact. And that should be your measurements of success. The IT is just a tool. It's not rolling it out and rolling out the solution is not the actual measure of success. The measure of success is the outcomes that result from the technology.
Well, thank you very much, Don, for joining us today. Again, for our listeners, this has been Don McMillan, Senior Director of Information Services and Regional CIO for Maine Health Central Region. Don, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.